is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
Hey Hoopheads, our partners and friends at Dr. Dish Basketball are here to help your team train bigger and better with exclusive Black Friday savings all month long. Now until November 30th, get $3,500 off the Dr. Dish CT Plus and experience firsthand what the ultimate training solution is all about. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com and follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Mention the Hoopheads podcast and save an extra $300 on the Dr. Dish Rebel, All-Star, and CT models. Those are some great deals, Hoopheads. Get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today.
Hi, this is Coach Dan DeCrane from Gilmore Academy, and you're listening to the Hoopheads podcast.
Are you a basketball coach or trainer looking to connect with new clients? U-Train is here to help you manage your business and reach a wider audience. Best of all, it's completely free to use. Simply create a profile, list your services, post pins, and share your free booking website link. You can set your own rates and schedule, and use U-Train to communicate with clients, manage appointments, handle refunds, and collect payments automatically. So why wait? Join U-Train today for free and start reaching new clients. That's U-Train, U-T-R-A-I-N, U-Train. Download today on the App Store and Google Play. Prepare like the pros with the all-new FastDraw and FastScout. FastDraw has been the number one play diagramming software for coaches for years. You'll quickly see why Fast Model Sports has the most compelling and intuitive basketball software out there. For a limited time, Fast Model is offering Hoopheads listeners 15% off FastDraw and FastScout. Just use the code HHP15 at checkout to grab your discount, and you'll be on your way to more efficient game prep and improve communication with your team. FastModel also has new coaching content every week on its blog, plus play and drill diagrams on its playbank. Check out the links in the show notes for more. FastModel Sports is the best in basketball. Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads podcast. It's Mike Klinzing here with my co-host Jason Sunkel tonight. And we are jumping on after, well, I guess we're in the middle of another night of the NBA in-season tournament. As you'd like to tell me, the Cavs are still alive at 2-1, despite the fact that the Pacers have already wrapped up.
They're the only team that's wrapped up
in the East.
Group A.
Are we Group B?
Group A.
Group A. Okay, Group A. All right, sounds good.
Yeah. And I might just start saying that I've wrapped up this total thing, Mike.
Come on.
Well, so last week I was up by 10 on you.
Okay.
I am now up by 18 on you, Mike.
18. Come on. Where am I falling short?
Memphis wins. Look,
since last week I'm trending positive. except for one area, no, right?
Listen. I'm at 135.
Wait. Stop. I'm going through all mine right now. I'm going through them because I want to know where I'm falling short. Wizards losses, that's a big thumbs up. Bucks wins, that's a big thumbs up. Hornets losses, I guess they beat the Celtics, but come on, that's good. Detroit losses, that's a huge, huge win.
That's your best one.
Right. The only one I'm going negative on right now is Warriors wins. That's looking a little shaky right now.
Oh, I think you're going negative on Pacers losses, buddy boy.
Wait, hold on, man. Hold on. That was my last pick, so just relax, man.
No, was it?
Rockets
Kings
losses.
Was your last pick, wasn't it?
No. Pacers. Pacers is my last pick. Or maybe it was Hawks wins. I don't know. I can't really tell.
I have the order here. I put them – oh, maybe I'm wrong. Okay, go ahead.
They were either number 12 or number – no, they were either number 13 or number 15 in my picks. I don't know how I wrote them because it's – see, here's how I wrote them.
I put them in the order based on your picture you sent to me, and I had Kings wins and Memphis wins as your, last two picks.
So I don't know. It just depends on how you write them. Anyway, okay, so – Warriors wins is going the wrong way. Rockets were 6-3 last week, and now they've lost three in a row. Feel good about that. Utah, I feel good. Knicks, they're going to be around 500, so I feel okay with Knicks wins. Pelicans wins. Zion, looking good.
Pelicans, I think, are on the way up. OKC wins. I'm feeling good. Memphis, obviously, that's down at the bottom. They're not going to win a lot of games, but hey, who knows? Kings wins is looking good. That was shaky at the beginning. Pacers losses. I'm still not convinced the Pacers are going to win 50 games. I mean, they might win 45, but that's not going to be a complete destruction. Clippers wins. My boy James Harden, he's led us to two victories in a row. I believe in the Clippers, man. I think we spoke too soon last week. I just think we talked about it too quickly. And Hawks wins. Come on, the Hawks are going to be right around 500. So I don't know where I'm struggling so badly. Where are you doing so great? I'm not sure.
Boston wins. Denver wins. Cavs wins. Portland losses. Spurs losses. Wolves wins. Phillies wins. Bulls losses. Raptors losses. My only bad one is the Magic losses right now. Is my only bad one. I've got five Magic losses. That's not looking good. But everything else, Heat wins, Dallas wins, Phoenix wins. And Phoenix, I took some liberty. I did give myself the Phoenix win over the Portland Trailblazers already. So that nets me two right there. So if that somehow happens to reverse the course, I have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. I have 7 in double digits, whereas you only have 4.
All right. Well, I still feel pretty good. I'm feeling pretty good about mine. I feel confident that, although I'm looking at did we figure out whether mathematically this is going to end up being a tie no matter what happens?
No. It won't be.
I know it's not.
Listen, and like for example, with the Cavs and Sixers, I was going to get a win either way tonight. You're going to get a point with the Jazz loss tonight, Mike. The Jazz are getting embarrassed by the Lakers right now. You're going to get a point with the Jazz loss. So Jazz are going to lose a lot of games, buddy.
They're going to lose a lot of games.
But I have the Lakers win, so that's going to cancel each other out. And I got the Suns and the Blazers. As long as the Suns hold on, they're up by 9 with 3 minutes left. But if you root for the Blazers to come back, Mike, in the next 3 minutes of game time, then the lead shrinks because I've already given myself that lead that game. So,
okay, good. Well, I'm glad to know that. All right, where do we want to start tonight? We start with the Cavs Sixers game.
I think we got to start with the Cavs Sixers game. Let me just say this much: the Cavs played very well in the first half. The second half, it was clear to me, like the Cleveland Browns, that the Sixers came out with some adjustments, Mike. The Cavs did not come out with any adjustments other than let's not put Craig Porter in and let's get Jason really mad that Dean Wade is getting a lot of minutes. Because Dean Wade, listen, I understand that Dean Wade is a serviceable player in the NBA, and I know that he is a big-ish body, okay, who's going to attempt to guard Tobias Harris. But any time that he is on the offensive end of the floor, he is worse than Isaac Okoro. He is worse, in my opinion, than Isaac Okoro. He just takes up space. He catches the ball, and he looks like he doesn't know what to do on the offensive end of the floor. He is completely clueless as to, like, should I shoot the ball? Should I drive to the basket? There was a possession. He caught the ball in the corner, and there was no defender within 5 feet of him, and he just held the ball until the defender got there. If he would have drove baseline, if he would have shot the ball, I wouldn't have been as upset with him. But he just stood there and waited for the defender to come. And then he promptly turned it over. Anytime he gets the ball, I give it to you. He had two huge offensive rebounds that led to no points because we missed all those shots. But and I understand that he's a body. But the fact that he played so many minutes is a crime. Like, I don't know if there's who I would have played in front of him because of the fact that Mitchell's out, LeVert is out, Okoro's out. Like, I don't know. But I'm telling you, like, I just was so frustrated with him, especially with him being played in overtime when Craig Porter Jr., listen, this guy, no one even saw him playing even any kind of role when the season started, right? Like, I'll be honest with you, I wouldn't be able to pick him out of a lineup 3 games ago. Like, honestly, I don't know that I would have. I know he had a decent summer league, but I still wouldn't be able to pick him out of a lineup. He's come out and he's played so well. We're going to overtime. Darius Garland's getting hounded, bringing the ball up the court. And no one's there to help him. I mean, I think Mobley ended up bringing the ball up the court two or three times in overtime to start overtime to try to help out like Garland. Get another ball handler. Amazingly, the second that Porter Jr. came in, the Sixers' defense wasn't as effective. They still stopped us. We still didn't run a very good offensive scheme on the other end of the floor. But at least we had another guy to bring the ball up that could like actually handle it and not look so loosey-goosey with it like Mobley does at times. I don't know. It's a questionable J.B. Bickerstaff decisions. And I tweeted it right at the end of overtime. And I'm glad I was wrong, but I said there is no chance the Cavs win this game in overtime with the current status quo of our offense. We better go for a three when we were down two with, 18 seconds left. I said we needed to drop a three-point play because I didn't feel good about overtime. Now, we ended up winning the game, but it was brutal. And it was also brutal that Embiid foul was a brutal call. Like, I'm a Cavs fan. I'm going to be unpartial here. There's no way that was a foul on Embiid. That should have been a foul on Patrick Beverley, right? Like, you agree with me, right, Mike? That was a brutal call.
Yeah, absolutely.
And, like, we lucked out. Like, does that change the complexion of the game? I think it changes probably what they run on the offensive end of the floor. Maybe Embiid shoots the three. Maybe Embiid sets the screen for Maxey and it gets him a better look than he got because he didn't get a very good look, and it was a terrible shot. And then the inbound plays that they ran was not very good. Off a timeout, by the way. That's normally Nick Nurse's specialty, is a out of bounds sideline or like out of bounds inbounds play. Was not a very good play at all, or they didn't execute it. I don't know. But regardless, the Cavs get the victory. That's really good. It's good to see that they got the victory, despite the fact that we were shorthanded and they were at full strength. Right. I mean, I know Kelly Oubre is a role player, and he's good for them off the bench, but they were at full strength. They had all their starters. We literally had a starter and our sixth man out, and our seventh man, really. Our starter, a sixth man, and a seventh man out, and we won that game. So that's a good look for the Cavs. And by the way, I want to note, we were both very, very wrong. We went 2-2 last week. We said they were going to go 2-2 in the games, and they ended up going 4-0, Mike. So I'm glad we were wrong, right? I mean, it was 2-2, right? They played.
Yeah, they won 5 out of 6.
They beat Detroit. They beat the Nuggets. Maybe we had them at 1-2, or I had them at 2-1, and you had them at 1-2 because I was like, you're very negative, and I was positive last week. And we ended up both being wrong as they won all three of them. So good stuff.
Yeah, they won 5 out of 6. So
they're trending in the right direction.
Yes, they've kind of righted the ship for sure.
And that was the tough. That was their tough schedule, because like when I was looking ahead, so you know they play the Heat tomorrow. That's going to be a tough game. The Heat did not play tonight, so they've probably been sending Cleveland hit up the nightlife of Cleveland tonight. Okay, so and then obviously they're off Thursday. We're off Friday as well. We play at home against the Lakers, home against the Raptors. And then home against the Hawks. We get 4 straight home games, Mike. That doesn't happen very often. So we've got Heat tomorrow, Lakers, Raptors, and then Hawks. So we do have 4 games in 7 days, but they're all home games. So that's good for us. I'll make my predictions that they're going to lose tomorrow. I just feel like Garland may not play tomorrow because of his wrist or whatever the heck happened. Maybe Mitchell shows up tomorrow. I don't know. Okay. And you can say your piece on Mitchell in a minute. The Lakers game, I think that's a toss-up probably. There's no way LeBron's not playing in that game because it's in Cleveland. There's no way he's not playing in that game because I know like they've been monitoring his minutes and stuff. But I'm going to say the Cavs win that game. The Raptors, the Cavs win. And then on Tuesday, the play-in game, the chance give us a chance at the tournament. I'm going to say they win that game. So I'm going to say they're 3-1 over the next 4 games. So then that would be 8 of their last 10 that they will have won. So 8-2 in their last 10. So that's what I'm going to say, Mike. You can say your piece on the Sixers game and then make your predictions, or you can make your predictions and say your piece. Go ahead, Mike. Sorry, I kind of rambled a lot there. So I apologize.
3-1, I think, sounds reasonable. I don't know for sure which game they're going to lose. I feel like we never play that well against the Raptors or Hawks. So it almost feels like you're going to beat the Heat and Lakers and then lose one of those stupid games to the Raptors or the Hawks. That's kind of what it feels like. I think you're right in terms of who knows what Garland's availability is tomorrow, coming off a back-to-back, flying back from Philly, and then having a tough, rested Heat team tomorrow night. It's going to be a tough game. Obviously, it's home. It's at home, which gives you a little bit of an advantage. But still, I expect that to be a difficult one. But let's be optimistic and say 3-1. I don't know which game they're going to lose. If I was going to pick one, I'd probably say one of the Raptors or the Hawks games, in all honesty, because I just feel like we don't play very well against either one of those teams. I want to go back to what you were talking about at the beginning when it comes to Dean Wade and then Craig Porter Jr. So I'll start with Wade. I think the big thing with him right now is I'm not sure what he does offensively because I don't remember the last time he made a three. And
I will do, Mike, while you're talking, ball... I'm going to look it up, Mike. I'm going to look it up. I'm going to try to find it.
Okay. He can't put the ball on the floor and go by anybody. So if you can't put the ball on the floor and go by somebody and you're not shooting the ball well, which I don't think he really is at this point, then offensively, I'm not sure what he's really bringing to the table. And then defensively, as you said, he's got a big body. And at times, you need him to match up with some of the bigger guys in the wing.
He hit two against the Nuggets. Okay. So
all right.
I'm going to go before that, though, because I feel like he put a zero burger up tonight. I feel like he's done that a few times since he started starting. So go ahead. Sorry. I apologize.
Nonetheless, I will say in Bickerstaff's defense, I'm not sure who you have as an alternative with all the guys that are out. I don't know who you're going to throw out there for any kind of extended minutes. I do think that to go along with what you said with Wade in terms of Craig Porter Jr., I mean, he's been a revelation the last couple games. What this guy's done doesn't look like a fluke. I mean, he's not shooting 80% from three. He's not doing all kinds of crazy stuff. It feels like the things that he's doing are within the confines of who he is or could be as a player. He had that nice finish tonight over Embiid where he went to Embiid's body and then finished the layup. I forget who gave him the pass, but it was a nice little drive, and then he, boom, bodied up with Embiid and finished that layup. And I just think that what he brings to the table in terms of his ability to get into the basket and finish with some soft floaters around the rim. And he just, I don't know. I really like the way that he plays. And he's clearly a guy that if they could get him playing at this level all the time and have confidence in him to have him out there, I think he's a guy that could add to what the Cavs do. He's got not a ton of size, but maybe a little bit more size than they've got in the backcourt. And I don't know. I like what I see out of him.
I'll be
I like
honest,
what
I see like, out of him. He reminds me, and I'm not saying, listen, he's played three games, so I don't want to like say like overreaction, okay? But the way he's played in those 3 minutes reminds me a lot of what Isaiah Thomas did in his Boston stretch. Just bringing the – creating things, doing things that he was – like you would think, how is this small guy doing this? Like, and I think he even sees the floor better than Isaiah Thomas. The passes he was making, there were two or three passes that he made. Like, and I'm of course,
I mean, he's a good passer. He's really he's good. A good passer. I agree.
Like,
I agree.
And you know, I know he played 5 years of college ball, so he just has a lot of experience because he was, you know, just playing as much as he did. And you know, a lot of times they talk about NBA players playing like only playing one and done. That 5 years is probably crucial for him, right? Like super crucial. The other thing, I did not mention this, and I want to say this now. It's crazy to think that a year ago, Tristan Thompson was working for ESPN and wasn't even playing basketball. Like, I would have never thought.
He's been surprisingly functional, there's no doubt.
Surprisingly functional.
I agree.
Like, tonight, putting him on Embiid in that last possession, was it perfect defense? No, but it's Tristan Thompson bothering you. Like, he knows what he's doing. He knows how to use his body. He knows how to box. Like, when shots go up, he's actually boxing people out. He might not be the biggest guy out there or the quickest. Maybe he should work on his free throws a little bit. But listen, I give that move, signing him for what we're paying him, was huge. I mean, it's been huge tonight. It was huge tonight. I mean, for sure. If we don't have Tristan Thompson, there's no way we win that game. Zero chance. He might not have scored.
No, Tristan did a really good job defensively. He really did.
I mean, he came in when both
our
guys
battles on the boards. He's physical.
Both our guys are in foul trouble. He had to play. Like, more minutes. He probably, going into tonight, he probably was slated to play 10 to 12 minutes, like maybe more, a little bit more, but he ended up playing way more than that. I don't know how many minutes he ended up playing, but he ended up playing a good amount.
Played 15 minutes. Oh, yeah. So 15 minutes.
It seemed like he played a lot more. So that means that he must have been doing something good. Like, really.
I mean, you look at the center matchup tonight, and Jared Allen gets 26 and 13, and he played really well. I thought he shot the ball well, and obviously he rebounded it. He made Embiid work for what he got, and I think Tristan came in and continued to do that while he was on the floor. So if you can get out of your starting center and your backup, they got 28 points and 15 rebounds. That's pretty good when you're matching up with Joel Embiid. I think the Cavs would take that trade-off anytime. I think, look, the biggest thing that when I watch this team, you and I have had the dream of Evan Mobley becoming the best player on this team. And the more I watch Evan Mobley this season, I know at the beginning of last season I was concerned and I felt like he got back to doing some of the things that made him, that give you glimpses or thoughts that maybe this guy could become a really good offensive player, potentially a guy that could be a go-to guy, your number one guy. And now here in this beginning stretch of this season, I feel like it's almost to the point now where I don't know if the guy takes or makes any shots that aren't dunks. I mean, everything is a dunk. When he's around the basket, when he catches it, if there's any kind of traffic, he's got to pump fake and pivot and move and do this, and then he's got to try to go for a dunk. And if he doesn't dunk it, he's trying to shoot like these little flip hooks that just don't go in, and he's not finishing at all around the basket.
Luckily, he's good on the defensive end, Mike. That's all I'm going to say.
He's very good on the defensive end. I mean, he blocks shots. He still is vulnerable to guys who are physical and go into his body. But clearly, when he's in space, you feel pretty confident with him guarding anybody. And look, Evan Mobley is going to be a valuable, great player for years and years and years for this franchise because of what he can do defensively and his length, and he gives you options. But I just don't see – there just isn't any progress. I mean, in his third year, I mean, he still doesn't even look to shoot the ball from the outside. He still, whenever he puts it on the floor, it still gets poked away a third of the time anytime he puts it on the floor. He has no three-point shot. When he goes to the basket, unless it's a dunk – he just isn't finishing. Like, well, he's just throwing up these little.
Can I use an example from the game tonight, Mike? Can I use an example down from the game tonight? I want to say it was either at the end of regulation or the beginning of overtime when he led the break and he threw it. He had no one in front of him. No one. Like, there was two people that were like in the key area, like block a key area. And he didn't even think to attack it. He kicked it to Strews and it got stolen. You know what play I'm talking about? It was the play, and then someone got a foul on the other end because it wasn't the Strews flagrant. But by the way, that's a terrible call. There's no way that's a flagrant foul. I understand the NBA and the follow through nonsense. He got contact through the stomach and his body contorted because he got contact through the stomach, and then they call it a flagrant. That's a terrible call.
Yeah, but you know what? You know why it was flagrant though.
Why?
Because Strews felt he got fouled on the three on the previous possession, and then he's running back down the floor. And you could tell, even before the play, you could tell he was coming in. Maxey was not getting that shot off. And so I think the NBA is looking at that and going, all right, what's the intent here? And I think the intent was – I mean, he didn't want Maxey to score, obviously, so you kind of wrap him up. But I think in his heart of hearts, I think Strews would admit that he kind of gave a little bit of extra juice to that foul. So I didn't have a problem with that call. I mean, look, in the NBA 15 years ago, is that a flagrant foul? No.
Five years ago, that wasn't a flagrant foul.
I don't know. It's whatever. Pitiful. It is what it is. It is what it is.
Just like the NFL, pitiful.
Look, I'm worried about Mobley. I really am. Offensively, I just don't see anything. Like, his game hasn't diversified at all. He can't shoot. He doesn't even look to shoot anymore. He doesn't finish inside unless he pivots like six times and somehow frees himself up enough space to dunk. If he has to go up and shoot over top of anybody, he's going up weakly. And look, he does a ton of great stuff, but I think the days of us hoping for him to become a number one offensive option on a championship team, I mean, unless something dramatically, drastically changes, I just don't see that happening. And then I guess my other greater point with the Cavs is, look, Mitchell's been great this season. He's been great. He's averaging, what, almost 30 a game, and he's shooting 54% or something. He's shooting over 40% from three. And I think you sent me that stat of what he's doing in transition, that he's the number one transition finisher in the league this year. But I just don't think long-term, if you want to win a championship, I just don't think you can have Mitchell and Garland as your two guards. I just don't. I don't think that, one, their size defensively, and two, I think they're both better when they have the ball in their hands. And I think Garland is a better floor general, despite the fact that he's become a turnover machine to this point in the season. I feel like he has really been careless with the basketball. But I like the team better when the ball is in Garland's hands. And maybe that just means Mitchell has to play more off ball. But then you're not getting the best out of Donovan Mitchell. So I don't know what the answer is. I don't know if the Cavs, where they are in terms of their discussions with him, in terms of extending, whether or not that's a possibility, whether or not they have a feel for what he's going to do when he gets to that player option. But I can honestly say that if at some point it comes down to Donovan Mitchell is going to leave or we're going to have to trade him, as much as I like the guy, I will not – I don't think it's a crushing blow for this team if you have to trade Donovan Mitchell at some point.
I think the offseason is what's going to happen still. I still state that's going to happen.
And I think you're probably right.
Unless we get to the Eastern Conference Finals, then they'll hold on to him. That's my prediction.
Yeah. I mean, look, and he's a great player, and – with great talent, you figure out a way maybe to make it work if he wants to stay. I mean, obviously, if he wants to stay, they're not going to be getting rid of him. But if he wants to go and you can get a return for him, then again, I don't know what the return is out there. I don't know who the perfect player is for the Cavs to be able to bring in. James Harden, there you go. I'll pass. That'll be a hard no for me. Harden, no. But I do like – I just like the way this team operates when the ball is more – in Garland's hands. I think there's more distribution. I think more guys get touches. And I just don't know the viability of that small backcourt. You see it all over the league. It's really, really hard to win when you got 2 6-foot-1 guards that are your guys. And I also think it's tough when you have 2 6-foot-1 guys who are your two best offensive players. I remember we used to say that about Kemba Walker, like a 5'9 dude. Sure, in the regular season where teams aren't keying in on him, that guy can be your leading scorer. But in the playoffs, when teams tilt their defenses towards your best players, I just think you have to have a guy who has some type of physical advantage. And I just don't think at 6'1", as physical as Donovan Mitchell is and as explosive as he is, I think you can bottle the guy up. And look, the Knicks did it last year. And look, it wasn't all Donovan Mitchell's fault, but he certainly didn't come to play in that playoff series against the Knicks. So I'm a little worried about where they are.
Does he play tomorrow, Mike? Do you think he plays tomorrow?
I don't know. I mean, I have no idea. I mean, a hamstring, I don't know. I guess.
Are they being super careful? Like, they're being super careful with it, obviously. Like,
I think you just be super careful. I mean, there's no sense in rushing them back. I mean, I think when this team's at its best, when they're at full strength, I mean, there's definitely some things that have me worried, but I think that ultimately this team has talent.
Is it worrying to you that he wasn't even at the game tonight?
Not because they're coming home. It's a one game trip, so you're coming back home tomorrow night. So yeah, it doesn't worry me that much, I guess.
Okay. He was tweeting throughout the whole game though, so at least that means he was watching.
Oh, there you go. He's watching.
Yep. All right. So the other game that was worth watching tonight, the Pacers clinching their in season tournament after the Hawks scored 76 points. Was that no? No, 86. Was it 86
points? 86 points.
They scored 86 points in the first half, and then they scored 66 points in the second half, and they lost the game. Like,
that's crazy, man.
The final score, Pacers 157, the Hawks 152. Tyrese Halliburton went crazy in the third quarter. I think he had 28 points in the third quarter. Is that right? I'm pretty sure he went absolutely bonkers. Halliburton ended with 37 points. Buddy Hield had 24.
Obi Toppin had 21, and he absolutely destroyed that one dunk. The Pacers are really good, Mike. Now they're good now. Well,
they're really good offensively.
They're really good offensively. Defensively, they're not good. But with that being said, like, you know, are they this version's 12 seconds or less Spurs, where they're just, or Suns, where they're just going to score a ton of points and hope that they're going to? Here's my problem.
They don't have that kind of top end talent. I mean, Halliburton is a top end talent, and the rest of their guys are role guys. I mean, they don't have anybody. Buddy Hield's a shooter, sure. Miles Turner has value, but Miles Turner is not a number two guy on a team that's going to win a round of the playoffs. I mean, this team's not going to get into the playoffs if they do, and they can continue. They're not going to win a round of the playoffs. There's no way. Not with the defense that they have right now.
Yeah. So, but I mean, it's still impressive. The numbers they're putting up are super impressive, right? I mean, you got to.
Halliburton's incredible. I mean, yeah, the numbers offensively, what they're doing. I mean, I believe they're the number one offense in the league right now. And look, I've been touting Halliburton. I talked about him this summer with USA Basketball that I thought when you start putting together lists of guys that you'd rather have than Tyrese Halliburton, that list is a lot smaller than what you think. And you start looking around the league and you look at lead guards or you look at young guys under the age of 25. I'm not sure there's too many guys. The list of guys that you would take before Tyrese Halliburton is pretty small. And he's done it not only with his scoring, but also with his playmaking, which I think people knew that he was going to be a guy that could distribute and run a team and kind of bring you the intangibles. The question with him was he going to be able to score enough to keep defenses honest and become that number one option? And clearly he has become that number one option. And if you're Indiana, you've got a guy that is a cornerstone, and you just got to keep building your roster and figuring out who are the guys that can play next to Tyrese Halliburton, because he's going to be a guy that you're going to want to continue to build around for the next however many years, 10 years in your franchise. And the nice thing about Halliburton is I feel like you could plug him into any system with any type of player, and it's not going to matter, because he's just one of those guys, almost in a similar fashion, obviously not as big and not as versatile as Jokic and what he can do in terms of being able to impact the game in so many different ways because of his size. But Halliburton, a good defensive player, a guy who can score it, a guy who can distribute, and a guy who, again, when you start looking at who's fun to play with in the league, that's a list that Tyrese Halliburton is going to be on. He's going to be pretty high on that list too, in terms of guys who are fun to play with. So I think Indiana's going in the right direction. I don't think they're a legitimate playoff threat unless they figure out a way to tighten up their defense. But certainly, look, their games are fun. I mean, every game they play, you're looking at they're scoring 130. Their opponents are scoring 120 or 130. Tonight, both teams are in the 150s. It's crazy. I mean, it's crazy.
All right. So, and then I guess the only other Eastern Conference thing I want to cover, your take on LaMelo Ball having to cover his tattoo, Mike. Do you have a take? Because I think it's ridiculous. I saw someone. Here's what I'm going to say. And I don't want to dive too far into this, Mike. But we're going to sit here. They said that if he didn't do it, they were going to suspend him and fine him. But a teammate of his continues to do things that are not so good towards women. And we're sitting here and worrying about a tattoo. Come on, man. That's what I'm going to say. That's where I'm going to say, come on, man. What's your take?
It seems like you have to draw the line between Miles Bridges and his alleged trail of domestic abuse and a guy's tattoo. To me, they don't really seem to be on equal footing. And when you talk about the NBA, I guess you can talk about due process and you can talk about whether or not this or that, but there's plenty of instances where the NBA has cut bait on guys that clearly have done things that maybe haven't been produced a conviction, let's put it that way. And I just feel like the fact that the Hornets still are employing Miles Bridges to me is that's troublesome. And as far as tattoos go, I mean, whatever. You want to make them cover it, make them cover it. But to me, look, there's so many tattoos in the league. I don't know how you can track them all.
Yeah, okay. I just thought I wanted your take because that kind of irritated me when I saw it. I'm like, come on, man. All right. So Western Conference-wise, you said there were two teams that you wanted to hit on. And I'm going to be completely honest, Mike. Other than the Cavs, I've been kind of not paying too much attention to basketball. I've been so all in with the Browns and the NFL that I've not been paying as much attention. Because normally at this point, the Browns are out of it. So I've stopped really caring except for the marquee games. Like I'm normally more NBA focused, but I know you want to talk about the Wolves and the Thunder, which both teams are playing well. I know they both had really big games. I will say I saw something that Woj tweeted. Hold on. The Thunder tonight against the Trailblazers were 60.5% field goals, 61% from the three-point line, and 100% from the free throw. They are the first team in at least 25 years to shoot 60% from the field, 60% from the three, and 100% of free throws in a single game. That's a pretty good stat right there, Mike. I like that one. I mean, it was against the Blazers. I understand that. And the Blazers are clearly, like, one of the worst three teams in the league with all their injuries and whatnot. But still, impressive, right?
However, not fluky. Okay, for the season. For the season, team shooting stats for the Oklahoma City Thunder. Field goal percentage, 50.3% as a team. It's pretty good. Three-point percentage as a team, 41%. 41% as a team from three. Pretty good. Free throw percentage. What do you think they're shooting from their free throw percentage as a team?
87%.
86.7%.
Oh, 87%. That gets rounded up.
Yep.
I teach you rounded
up. Rounded up.
Shea, good guess.
92.8. Jalen Williams, 88. Chet, 90.7. Giddey, 82.4. Lou Dort, the weak link, shooting 81.1%.
Okay, so I have a question for you, Mike. I saw someone put the stats with Chet versus Wembanyama, and they're pretty much identical. But the difference is Chet's on a winning team and Wembanyama is on a losing team. Like, if you were to give...
Well, that's not the only difference. I mean, there's two major differences when you start talking about these two guys, right? One is that, yes, Chet's on a winning team, which has its advantages. Chet is also a guy who he doesn't have the same level of responsibility, I guess. Wemby's just getting more opportunities to just go, hey, man, go do your thing, which has led to him being less efficient. I mean, Chet right now, what he's doing, he's only averaging 10 field goal attempts a game. I'll go to Wembanyama's stats in a second. So here's Chet Holmgren, 56% from the field, 46% from three on 3.6 attempts per game, which isn't a ton by today's standards, but for your 7'2" center,
yeah,
it's quite a few. It's quite a few. And then he's shooting 90% from the line. And let me see if I can find his blocks here.
When I saw the stats, him and Wembanyama were basically the same. They were like
– Chet's blocking 2.1 points per game or 2.1 blocks per game.
I think Victor was at like 2.4. I think like when I saw it last. No, I don't remember when that was because, like I said, I haven't been – I've been looking – I've been kind of doing your box score thing and kind of just looking and stuff, but I have not
– Yep. So Wembanyama is averaging 18 points a game, 9 rebounds a game, 2.6 blocks.
Okay.
All right. But his shooting, compared to Chet, Wembanyama's shooting 42% from the floor versus 56 for Chet. He's shooting 27% from three versus, I forget what we say Chet was shooting. 50, I think, right around 50%. And Victor's shooting 78% from the line. So, again, he's shooting the ball solidly. So, look, I think both guys have proven over this beginning part of the season that they are both guys who are going to be hugely impactful players on both ends of the floor for the remainder of their career, provided the fact that they don't get injured. And I just look at, I don't want to talk a whole bunch about the Spurs, so let's jump back to the Thunder. I mean, when you look at what OKC has done, obviously we've seen them beat the Cavs twice, but I think the incredible thing about the Thunder, or why you have to take them seriously, is you're at a point now where Shea, first team All-NBA last year, I mean, there's nothing in his resume right now that would tell you that he's not going to repeat as a first team All-NBA guard. I mean, he's averaging 30 a game. He's averaging 6 rebounds, 6 assists. And then Shea is shooting from the field. Like, his shooting from the field is ridiculous. He's shooting 53.5% from the field. He's only shooting 36% from three, but that's really not his stronghold. And then he's shooting 93% from the line. So, and he's a guy who just feels like when you watch him play, I know in those two games that we watched an entire game against the Cavs, it felt like he could kind of get wherever he wanted to go on the floor and get whatever shot he wanted and just create enough space to be able to make that shot a relatively easy shot. And then you look at what the rest of this team is doing. I mean, clearly, I think Chet, as I said a minute ago, if he stays healthy, there's no reason to think that he's not going to continue to develop and be at worst the second best player potentially on what could be a championship roster. And then Dort, we know what he is in terms of his defensive prowess and just his physical size and toughness. And then you got Jalen Williams, who continues to develop as a scorer. And then Giddey's a guy, like everybody, you listen to national media and you think that they can't ship Giddey out of town fast enough because he can't shoot it. And yet he's probably one of the best passers in the entire league. And the dude's 6'9". I mean, he's huge. So I feel like they – and then they have all the draft picks. I mean, I don't even know. I mean, we could probably go through and do some research and figure it out. But they have – I mean, they seriously have like 11 first-round picks in like the next 4 years. It's ridiculous. So they're set up whenever they decide they want to make a move. Nobody's going to be able to outbid them when somebody comes available. Now, that doesn't mean necessarily that – they're going to be able to get anybody, because we know that sometimes the best laid plans don't always work out. But this team is positioned really well considering how good they already are. And I look at what they're doing to this point and it doesn't feel unsustainable. Like, their stats are probably going to come down and normalize.
Yeah.
But not that much. Not that much. I mean, I think all these guys, what they're doing, their continued improvement, I think they're going to be right there in the Western Conference. I really do. I think that you're looking at OKC right now. To me, they're almost a lock to be a top six. And I think there's a decent chance that they finish in the top four.
Okay. That's fair. I mean, that's a fair assumption. Like, they look really good. And I think we both are pretty high on them, right? We were both pretty high on them. This, I don't know if you have the folder, but I'm pretty sure we both picked them.
I don't have our over under sheet because I'm in the alternate location.
Alternate location.
Tonight, so I don't have
Thanksgiving. Alternate location. Thanksgiving break. Alternate location. AKA everyone was still awake when you started to record.
Everyone was still awake.
Yeah.
Everyone was still awake. So I did not get an opportunity to pull that. I just pulled our. I pulled our wins and losses.
Yeah. So listen, I think they're really good. I think they have potential to be really good. The big thing is, can they stay healthy, right? I mean, I guess that's really the big thing for all NBA teams. Can they stay healthy?
Yeah. I mean, yep.
And, like, obviously, like, I know there's been much ado about, like, what's Victor Wembanyama's plan for, like, games played and stuff, but Chet's probably in the same boat, right? Like, they're not going to sit here and he's not going to play 82 games this year. He's not going to play, like, I don't know, what's he going to top out at? Like,
I don't know. These guys are all playing. They're playing a lot more, right? I mean, they're playing way more than what they have.
Even your boy. Even your boy. Zion, of course, who I'm talking about.
Yeah. Zion's played a lot. Look, he's played a ton. I mean, so the Thunder have played, I believe, 14 games.
Yeah.
Shea's played 13. Chet's played 14. Chet hasn't missed a game yet. And you're 14 games into the season. So it feels like if these guys don't get hurt, that maybe they are going to play 70-plus games. Who knows? I mean, who knows? maybe the policy's working.
Maybe.
I think there was a stat. I can't remember which pod I was listening to that they went through the top 10 scorers. And of the top 10 scorers at that point,
Mitchell was,
that was before Donovan said. That was before Donovan had sat out these last couple games. But of the top 10 scorers, I think Giannis had missed the most games. This was maybe like 5 days ago. Giannis had missed 2 games. Nobody else had missed more than one. And so is that the policy? Is that just the way the season and schedule is broken? Is that just the fact that none of those guys have gotten injured yet? I don't know. But it's better for the NBA when these guys are on the floor. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, oh, there's no question about that. Just a side note, we are going to – I'm ready to put our plant our flag in this, that we're going to have the second team's going to qualify for the NBA in-season tournament. The Lakers are going to be 3-0. If with a win, they qualify because they'll be 3-0 and there's no one in their group because they are currently up 25 points on the Utah Jazz.
All right, so Utah and Indiana. Los Angeles. Why did I say Utah? Why did I say Utah? Where did I get Utah from?
Well, the Lakers. They played the Lakers.
And the Pacers.
So, yeah, Lakers and the Pacers
are
in.
Lakers and Pacers. All right, T-Wolves, man. Are you a believer?
I mean, I am. I think we were both pretty high on them, right? Coming into this. I think we both.
Not this high.
Not this high. Yeah, I mean, I was high on Anthony Edwards. I mean, I got them with my like ninth pick. I'm feeling pretty good about them. I feel really good about Anthony Edwards, the way he played in the summer, and then it's just brought come over here. And obviously, like they've got other pieces and parts that are playing really well, but he just brings, for the lack of a better word, the swagger, the attitude. He talks his talk. And he does talk a lot, Mike. I saw some stuff he was saying the other day. He's definitely talking a lot. But at the same time, like, if I was an NBA player, I'd probably be talking too, to be honest with you. Like, let him talk. Like,
He's 22 years old, man. 22 years old, dude.
Yeah. I mean, here's a question. Is his, like, I know you're big on Zion. Like, if you were to say who's going to have the better career, you got to pick Anthony Edwards, right?
I mean, at this point, I think you have to. I mean, I just don't see how.
I'm sorry to keep putting you in this position to defend Zion. I didn't mean it, but I'm just thinking.
No, I understand. You can't look at Zion's injury history to this point compared to Ant's injury history and say, oh, man, Zion's going to be healthy and be at his best for the next 10 years. Whereas I think with Anthony Edwards, you can be far more confident that that's going to be the case. And so, yeah, I mean, if they're both on the floor and they're both at full strength, I think you have yourself a debate. And I think, as I've said numerous times, Zion on the floor has been historically great. Maybe not as much this year. He's had a couple games where he's been really good. And then he's had a lot of games where he's been kind of eh. But if Zion can stay on the floor, now you got a conversation. But based on what we've seen to this point, their track records, I don't see how you can say any. I don't see how you could pick anybody but Anthony Edwards in that debate. It just what Edwards is doing right now at age 22, and he's clearly, I think, taken another step forward in his development, and the fact that you kind of have Cat taking a step back. Edwards is averaging almost 4 more field goal attempts per game than Towns. And Towns got off to a slow start, but he's been playing better as of late and sort of kind of finding his way. And I think when you look at this team and you look at how much better Jaden McDaniels has been, obviously last year against the Lakers, against the Nuggets, he punches the wall and breaks his hand. So he's not out there. And what he does as a 6'9", 6'10", defensive player and guard every position. You got Gobert, who's 7'4", and Towns, even though defensively he's not a very good defender and he gets lost a lot, he's still a dude who's 6'11 or 7 feet and super long. And then you're talking about Edwards, who is probably one of the five best physical specimens in the entire league. When you start talking about a 6'6 dude with the wingspan that he has and the physical size and just the athleticism and strength and everything that goes along with that package that is Anthony Edwards. I mean, defensively, they're just so menacing to deal with. And then if Edwards can become that guy who you can count on not only to score, but also to set up other guys, and he's better this year than he's ever been. He's averaging almost 5.5 assists, which is up, I think, maybe an assist and a half, maybe two from last year where he was. And the ball just is in his hands more. And so I think that when you start talking about how good this Timberwolves team can be, you're talking about how far can Anthony Edwards take them and what can they be defensively in the playoffs. And I think just the fact that they're huge gives them an opportunity when it comes to playoff time for them to be successful. I don't think this is a fluke. I think Minnesota is going to be right there at the top of the West for the remainder of the season. I think Oklahoma City and Minnesota have a great chance of both finishing in the top four out West, which is saying something. Because again, there's just no easy games. I mean, you look at the schedule, you know, even when we were talking about the Cavs schedule, you're like, okay, Toronto, Atlanta. And I'm like, those teams still make me nervous. I mean, really, other than Detroit, Charlotte, and Washington, I'm not sure, and San Antonio, maybe Utah. I mean, maybe there's five teams that you can say, eh, those are kind of easy games.
I did some crack research. Anthony Edwards last season averaged 4.5 assists per game. So he's averaging about half of assists more per game.
Okay.
So,
okay.
His rebounds are about the same. But the big jump, his free throw percentage has gone up. He was a 75% free throw shooter last year. He's an 84% free throw shooter right now, and he's shooting the same amount. He's taken almost an additional two shots per game. He's taking an additional three per game. He's shooting at a higher clip for three. His field goal percentage has jumped from 45% to almost 47%. And he's actually playing less minutes per game, Mike, right now than he did last year. So just putting
part of it too is just his confidence, right? I mean, part of it is just the feel that when you're watching this guy, it just feels different. And the team seemingly has coalesced for whatever reason. I know last year, part of the problem obviously was Towns was out for most of the season, so they never really got to see that whole team. It feels like they're starting to figure out the key is what is Towns doing offensively and how do you utilize his talent and still make Edwards the featured player in your offense. And if they can strike that balance, if they can figure out what that balance is, then they've got something. And Gobert is back to last year. I would say he was subpar defensively and he's been back to the level that he was when he was in Utah.
He's still not a good defender against Draymond's chokehold.
No, he can't defend himself against that. But hey, that's the way it goes. That's the way it goes.
What do you think?
He didn't need to. It was good.
Do you think Draymond was going to get more than five games, or did you think five games was the right amount?
Do I think it's the right amount, or what did I think he was going to get? Those are two different questions.
What did you think he was going to get?
I think five. I thought between three and five was probably going to be the reasonable number. What should he have got? I mean, I've said it numerous times that he's a clown. I would have sent a deeper message to him, maybe suspended him for 10, just because, look, he is who he is. And I don't know. If I'm the NBA, how long do you just let the guy just do whatever he wants? I mean, he constantly is running his mouth. He's running around the court. What he did against the Cavs when he was storming around the court, yelling at fans and yelling at players and whatever else he was doing. Like, that stuff just is – I know you sent me the old Malice in the Palace retrospective back a couple of days ago. But when you start thinking about what precipitates stuff like that, it's the kind of behavior that Draymond – was demonstrating where he's getting people riled up. And it's just, I don't know. To me, I would have given him 10, but I didn't expect it to come to that.
And the other thing, too, I saw an interesting tweet. Like, Draymond does so many antics, and officials seem to be afraid to, like, tee him up right away. And then Jokic the other day, like, I don't think Jokic got to the point where he deserved a technical foul and to get ejected from the game in Detroit.
Like, well, same thing happened to Giannis when he was jawing after he made the after he dunked it, right? I mean, it's kind of that same thing. Like, I know that they're trying to prevent things from escalating, but I guarantee you could go back and watch Draymond do things that you just are stunned that nothing ever happened with some of the things that Draymond has done. I mean, it's just, I don't know, to me that they let him get away with a ton of stuff, a ton of talking that I'm not sure they would let anybody else get away with. So I wasn't surprised it was 5 games. If it was me, I probably would have suspended him more. But again, I'm probably at least a little bit biased.
Okay. It's the only other thing that I want to talk about in the Western Conference really quickly, Mike. LeBron passed 39,000 points tonight. Clearly, he's going to get to 40, right? He's getting to 40. There's no doubt. Unless the guy
tears his ACL or blows out his Achilles. I mean,
speaking of blowing Achilles, insane. Did you see the guy at the halftime of the Lakers game? He shot a 3-pointer to win like $10,000, and when he landed, he blew his Achilles.
So now he gets to pay for his surgery.
And the best thing was the Lakers announcer was like, "Oh, you missed the half corner. Now you get to try a 3-pointer." The guy couldn't even stand up. He's like, "Oh, we're not going to make you shoot a 3-pointer."
Well, that's not good. No, that's not good. Poor guy. That's not what you want. All right, LeBron James, dude. LeBron James. Currently 38 years old. 26 points a game, 8 rebounds, 6.5 assists.
How many minutes per game is he playing, Mike? How many minutes per game is he playing?
What's LeBron shooting from the field? Do you have any idea what he's shooting from the field?
I don't have anything pulled up in front of me. Let's see. 56%.
58.6%. I mean, it seriously is just ridiculous. I mean, it is completely and utterly ridiculous.
I will go back and say this, Mike. Michael Jordan's the greatest player ever. LeBron is the best athlete ever in the NBA. I'm going to say that.
LeBron has the greatest career. That's how I would phrase it. LeBron has put up the greatest statistical career of any player in NBA history. I mean, I think at this point it was between him and Kareem. I don't think at this juncture of his career, putting up the numbers that he's putting up at his age, I mean, it's unprecedented.
How much is this killing Jordan, by the way? Like, at his age, and just, do you think it's bothering him at all? Is it bothering him?
I don't know. I have no idea. I mean, if you're Michael Jordan, I feel like The Last Dance resurrected the Jordan greatness. I think if you're him, you have to feel fairly secure and confident in who you are. Obviously, there's always a competitive side to these guys, right? Obviously, Jordan has that competitive side more than anybody in the history of the game. So I'm sure that he doesn't love it. But at the same time, I think if you were to present him with a case that LeBron was the greatest player ever, I think he would gladly come back at you with his case. And I don't think he'd be wrong.
There's nobody that compares.
It's just, I'm sorry. It's not a comparison at their apex.
Craig Porter Jr. Is off to a good start, Mike. I don't know.
He is. I don't think he's getting either one of those guys. I don't think he's chasing down LeBron or Michael Jordan. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. All right. Any other NBA things that you can think of, Mike, that you want to talk about?
Let me just peruse here and see if there's anything else that
we are already at 57 minutes, Mike, just so you know.
We are. I know you want to talk. I know you want to talk Browns. Okay, here's what I'll say. I got one thing to say about the worst team in the league, the Detroit Pistons. That is a complete abomination, that team. Like, I just, when you look at that team,
How many games are they going to win this year, Mike?
They're not going to win many. Did we both
have the over on them this year, Mike? Did we both? I feel like
I know I liked them. I know I liked them. I said I thought they were a team that could maybe bounce, because I thought all the talk was Cade was so good with the USA Select team and Jaden Ivey in his second year. By the way, did you watch the Cavs game against the Pistons?
I bought bits and pieces. It was like that was Friday night, right? So I watched bits and pieces because
I can honestly say I haven't watched a ton of Pistons basketball. I caught bits and pieces last year, and that Cavs game was the first real moment of watching the Detroit Pistons this year other than highlights. Jaden Ivey, yikes.
He felt like he was so good last year, and he's coming off the bench.
He looked like he had no concept of how to play basketball. Well, like, he looked like a dude that was like, hey, man, you're a great athlete.
Dean Wade.
He looked like you're a great athlete. You've never seen a basketball before. Hey, man, go on out there and play. That's what he looked like. That was his feel for the game.
That's not good.
And then the weird part was you had Asar Thompson, who played, I don't know, 17 minutes in the first half, and then Monty Williams benched him. He only played a minute. They're like, he's like, we're not going to put up with that. And I don't know, maybe there was something that went on, but like, Sort Thompson's been great. I mean, that dude is just stuffing the stat sheet all over the place. The Pistons are a mess. They may not win 15 games. They really may not, because the league's just too good. Like, when you're as bad as they are,
I mean, look at Charlotte. I mean, Charlotte, who we both agree, like, isn't a great basketball team. But LaMelo Ball is averaging over his last five or six games, he's had over 30 points in all five or six games. Like, he's been really good. Like, they have glimmers of hope. Detroit Pistons, their glimmer of hope is the season ending, right? I mean, let's be honest. Get the season over with. And, like, I mean, it's not like the draft class is that great, right? This upcoming draft class, like, I don't even know.
Nah, I think you're waiting for Cooper Flagg. You're waiting for Cooper Flagg in 2025.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, that's the next guy. Like, I don't know that anyone in this draft class is, like, I mean, who knows if, like, I guess Bronny would be the only one, because you think maybe you can get LeBron somehow. But I don't even know.
Yeah, I don't think that's happening.
Well, I don't even think Bronny is even going to play. Like, right, really? Like, with this whole situation.
I don't know. I haven't heard anything. So I don't know if he's going to get out there at all this year. Yeah, if you're Charlotte, look, you got LaMelo. He's averaging 25 a game. 5.5 rebounds and eight assists. I'm not sure LaMelo is at this point in his career. I'm not sure he's a winning player, but he has talent.
He's a good guy in a bad team. He's good stats on bad teams.
Yeah, and maybe. I mean, you hope he could be more, but who knows? But they also have Mark Williams, you know, second year from Duke. He's averaging almost 14 a game.
I'll be completely honest with you. I've never heard that name before in my life.
Mark Williams. Okay, we'll see. You got to start paying attention. And then you got Brandon Miller. So you at least have three guys who are young and that you can look at and say, these guys could theoretically be building blocks. And then if you're the Hornets, you're just going to ignore the Miles Bridges situation. Miles Bridges, no matter what we think of him as a human being, he's a good basketball player. So I don't know. Detroit just is a mess. Like, when I watched them play against the Cavs, it was just, ugh. I mean, they were pitiful. So that jumped out at me. Let me just look and see if there's anything else that really – that really stands out for me in either one of the conferences. That I guess the only other thing that I would say is I think Sacramento has really turned the corner. I know they lost last night, but De'Aaron Fox is good. And I think Sabonis had a triple-double. And look, with the Halliburton thing, Sacramento, you have to look at it and say, whew, Tyrese Halliburton. It was rough to let that guy go, but Sabonis is a really good player, and he's been good for Sacramento, and De'Aaron Fox is a really good player too. Now, I'm not sure going forward which one of those guys, depending on what you like, they're slightly different players. I think De'Aaron Fox probably a better scorer. Tyrese Halliburton probably a better distributor, but they're both really, really, really good players. You can kind of understand to some degree why you wanted to split those guys up, kind of like the Cavs and Garland and Mitchell. Except Garland and Mitchell are both 6'1", whereas De'Aaron Fox is 6'5", and Halliburton's like 6'6". So you don't have that same problem, although neither, I think De'Aaron Fox, clearly his reputation is not as a great defender, although with his speed, it's kind of amazing that he's not a more impactful defender. So I don't know, Sacramento, it looked like it was a little shaky there at the start. And once De'Aaron Fox came back from injury, they turned it around.
How dare he come back?
That's the last thing that I got. That's right. Exactly. Bad timing for the Cavaliers, but it is what it is. All right. You want to talk Browns? Talk Browns.
Listen. Okay. Here's what I'm going to say. That was lining up to be a very Brownsy loss, and they still somehow won. I texted you and I said, oh no, smelling kind of Brownsy. Listen, they've clearly got a lot of work to work on the offensive end of throwing the football. They can't be predictable and throw these 5-yard out patterns all game. They gotta let him loose a little bit. They gotta let him cook. Like, they gotta let him throw the ball more than 5 yards downfield. You gotta give him
that. Not in a game like that, though.
I did not agree. I did not agree with the announcer saying that when he was saying it. But if you notice, once again, as I said at the beginning of this podcast, the Pittsburgh Steelers came out with a change in game plan, a change of attack in the second half. The Cleveland Browns came with zero change. We're just going to run the same crap that we've been running all game and expect it to work. We are terrible at halftime adjustments, and they're not going to be able to be terrible. Now, we have the Broncos on Sunday, who the Broncos have been better. They've been better. Okay. They did lose this past week. They've been better, though.
Won four in a row.
Yeah. So they've been better.
They've won four in a row, man. They've won four in a row.
Did they win last
week? They didn't lose this week.
Who did they beat?
They beat the Vikings, man. They've won four in a row. They beat the Vikings.
Oh, yeah, they did beat
the Vikings. They're 1-5. Now they're 5-5. They're hot, man. They're the hottest team in the league. The Browns' schedule is horrendous. Look, if the Browns don't win, I mean,
they got to win three games.
If they don't win three games, they don't deserve to make the playoffs. Stefanski should be fired. Andrew Berry should be fired. Just clean house. If they don't win three games, it's over. You got to win. I mean, this schedule is ridiculous. I mean, you should win. I mean, legitimately, you should probably win 5 or 6 out of those 7.
I'm not really to say that. I mean, the Houston game is going to be tough, okay, because CJ Stroud has been playing so good. The Jets game, theoretically, if Aaron Rodgers comes back, like, that's
what Aaron Rodgers comes back. We're going to kill that guy. He's not coming back. And if he does, we're going to destroy him.
Okay.
How's he going to move around?
Jacksonville game is not a done deal. Okay. I'm not willing to say the Jacksonville game because they're 7-3. They have the same record as us, Mike. The Jacksonville team, There's a good chance that game. Did you know this
wrinkle?
I didn't know this until Schefter tweeted it. Did you know that they can flex a game to Monday night? Did you know that? This is the NFL.
No.
Could take a Sunday game and flop it with a Monday night game. Would you be surprised Cavs or the Browns get flexed with the Jacksonville Jaguars? Both teams come into that week, like, I think that's 3 weeks away. So say
9-3.
Why wouldn't they? Sunday night football could flex them too. I mean, I can't believe the games that they're keeping, like the games they're keeping on Sunday night football. Like, this week's Sunday night football game is abysmal, I'm pretty sure. Like, it's terrible.
Here's my question. Here's my question for you. With DTR at quarterback, how many points per game are the Browns going to average over the next 7 games? What do you think is our offensive
17's at Matt. That's output. 17's the high point.
17's the average. That's what I was – 17's the average. Okay. So let's just go with which one of these teams and quarterbacks can put up 17 points against the Browns. Russell Wilson and the Broncos, can they put up 17 points against the Browns? I say no.
Probably not.
Decrepit Matthew Stafford and the pitiful Rams, can they put up 17 against the Browns?
I mean, they're putting up a decent amount of points, but their defense is terrible. So I'm going to say the Browns are going to score more than 17 points against the Rams, Mike. I'm going to say that right now. They're going to score more than 17 points against the Rams, but could the Rams put up 17 points? I'm going to say they could. Will they? I don't know.
No, that's a no. The Jaguars, I would say yes. The Bears?
No.
The Texans, I would say yes.
Yes.
The Jets? No. The Jeff Browning Cincinnati Bengals? That's a hard no. So you're looking at two teams that can put up 17. Now, look, the Browns might not be able to score 17 in a given game, and so they could lose. I think they go 5-2 the rest of the way.
Oh, my God. 5-2? You're saying put them at 12-5, Mike? Are they going to be – does that mean they win? They're the number one seed in the AFC, Mike? Is there a chance? Listen –
They'd have to go.
They're a half game out of the number one seed, Mike. They're a half seed.
You got to go 13 and you're gonna have to go 13-4.
They're a half game out of the one seed. I was talking to my dad about
this. You're gonna have to go 13-4.
I was like, the Browns could get the bye. Like they theoretically could get the. They could. I'm not saying they're going to. Looking at their schedule, if everything falls the right way, you know they go 5-2 or they go 6-1. Like. They could get it. Now. I am a Browns fan. Okay, I know what's gonna happen. We're probably gonna shit the bed on Sunday, Mike, and we're gonna lose to Denver.
Probably gonna go. Listen, we're probably gonna go 2-5, and it's gonna come to. We're gonna probably be. I would guess we're gonna be 2-4 going into that last game against the Bengals, and Kurt Browning is going to score like, you know, that guy's going to put up 48 points against us in that last meaningless game for the Bengals. That's what's going to happen. Come on. We know it.
It's crazy to me, Mike. It's
5-2, five and two. Hey, you know what would be fun? Number one seed in the AFC, your Cleveland Browns. Number one seed in the NFC,
the Detroit Lions.
Here's what's going to happen. I can guarantee the first time either one of those teams makes the Super Bowl, guess who they're going to be playing?
Each other.
The other one. I guarantee it. I guarantee that's what's going to happen. I guarantee it. Bookmark it now. Lions, Browns, Super Bowl. Maybe not this year, but sometime that's what's going to happen.
And then Browns will lose. It'll be just like the Cubs and the Indians in the World Series.
There you go. I don't know, man. It is. Look, I mean, that was a great win for the Browns against the Steelers. It looked like they were going to pull defeat from the jaws of victory, and instead it went the other way. And to make two game-winning walk-off kicks in 2 weeks against your two biggest rivals, it's hard to argue with it. And one you do with a backup quarterback who really had done next to nothing the entire game and then takes you down the field for that field goal. Kind of an incredible scenario. Again, the exact opposite of what you would normally expect to happen to the Browns. Instead, the Browns had it happen for them. And so
the best news we have, the team that's most threatening to me that's behind us, okay, is the Buffalo Bills. Let me read you the Buffalo Bills schedule. You ready for this? They play the Eagles on Sunday. They have a bye week. They play Kansas City the week after that. They play Dallas the week after that.
Okay.
That's brutal.
Those are three pretty tough games.
Okay. They play the Chargers, okay, which they should win that game. But the Chargers are also known to just in December. They can score. On New Year's Eve, they play the Patriots. That's a loss or a win. The Patriots are terrible. And then the last game of the season is the Dolphins. Legitimately, the Bills could go 2-4 the rest of the way.
I think they lost their mojo in this game against the Browns.
Well, they fired their offensive coordinator. Pittsburgh has a very easy schedule the rest of the way, Mike. They go Bengals, okay, they go Cardinals, they go Patriots, they go Colts, they go Bengals again, they go Seahawks, and then they go Ravens. They have a pretty easy schedule the rest of the way, like we do. I mean, I don't want the Texans are in the same boat. Like, they have a pretty easy schedule the rest of the way. Like, the Texans go. Now, they might win the division, so it won't matter. Okay, but they go Jaguars. Oh no, they can't win. The Jaguars are going to win the division. They go Jaguars, Broncos, Jets, Titans, Browns, Titans, Colts. Like, that's a pretty easy schedule for the Texans the rest of the way.
The Browns would have to completely collapse not to make the playoffs at this
100%,
point.
I mean, I agree.
With their schedule and how easy that schedule is, I just don't see how they make it other than with a monumental collapse. And look, a monumental collapse is certainly possible when you're playing a backup quarterback, but I feel like this defense is going to keep you in games. I mean, the Browns offensively had no business being in that game on Sunday against the Steelers, but the defense is just so good that they're going to keep them in every game and give you a chance to win. And if turnovers ever start to even out at all for the Browns, I know that's the one thing their defense hasn't necessarily done an incredible job of, is getting turnovers. Yeah. But if somehow in this last half of the season that could start to even out, I really feel like the Browns would have – they're going to have a hard time not making the playoffs. And they would have to, again, really, really, really collapse at this point. So they would have the Browns. It would have to be a Brownsy collapse. So,
all right. All right. Anything else? Let's leave it there, Mike.
All right. Sounds good. We appreciate you staying up with us tonight to check out our NBA episode and listen to us talk a little bit of Cleveland Browns football. We hope everybody has a happy Thanksgiving. Please give thanks for all the blessings that you have in your life. And Jason and I will do the same. And to everyone out there, thanks for listening tonight. And we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks.
Your first impression is everything when applying for a new coaching job. A professional coaching portfolio is the tool that highlights your coaching achievements and philosophies, and most of all, helps separate you and your abilities from the other applicants. The Coaching Portfolio Guide is an instructional membership-based website that helps you develop a personalized portfolio. Each section of the Portfolio Guide provides detailed instructions on how to organize your portfolio in a professional manner. The guide also provides sample documents for each section of your portfolio that you can copy, modify, and add to your personal portfolio. As a Hoopheads Pod listener, you can get your Coaching Portfolio Guide for just $25. Visit coachingportfolioguide.com/hoopheads to learn more.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads Podcast, presented by Head Start Basketball.